Good afternoon, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3, your best and local community radio station. We'll be right on the air shortly. This is episode number 33. This is 1 year anniversary for us, and it's January 1st, 2013. We'll be right back with some more, and hang in there. We'll see you soon.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Keep your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the larger service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
Well, welcome back, folks, and thanks for listening in. This is our first show of 2013, and I'd just like to thank the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture, who decided to fund us again for another year. We're looking forward to a great year, bringing stories from the countryside to our urban listeners, and it's a pleasure today, actually, to have my guest, Mark Reeser. Hi, Mark.
How are you doing, Jeff?
Good. And Mr. Barkley Knapp, good to see you again, Barkley.
Yeah, happy New Year, Jeff.
And listeners, what's good here is that this is a one-year anniversary, and Mark, in fact, was a guest on our very first show, and just for fun, I went back through that show to see what we talked about, and I have a short list of stuff here, and I think we'll We'll maybe just run through those to start with, Mark, just to mention them and see where our conversation goes from there. I see here we talked about the rural water quality program. We talked about environmental goods and services. Risk management program was on our minds 1 year ago from today. Plastic wrap was on our mind. Farm Smart, that was a conference. It's on again this year, which is, I think, down in Ridgetown, correct? Or no, it's Guelph. In Guelph, right. And we talked a little about the CSAs, Community Shared Agriculture, and the Federation support of that. On our minds last year, two last things before I had to quit listening, was support of local food through the Food Link. And here's a topic that's probably relevant now. We talked about the higher food costs. And that is, once again, on our radar. So after 1 year, what's changed? What's new, Mark?
Oh, I don't know. Probably the biggest change, Jeff, is something that's not even on your list, and that is the increased cost of farmland in Waterloo Region and in Ontario and Canada and North America and for the world, for that matter. Prices have increased, some people would say, astronomically over the past year, probably because of the higher value of the crops that farmers sell. Number of implications of higher land prices depends what where you are in the system. I suppose if you are someone looking to purchase land, it's probably not a good thing. However, if you own land already, your equity has increased and probably make you happy.
For our listeners, which of course we're aiming towards our urban listener, they often talk about the price of food going up. One could, as you point out, was something to do with the price of land. Last year we talked about our concerns about the high price of food. Obviously those are still there, and you believe that its land costs are a big part of it. What else is causing a higher price of food?
Well, I would guess, Jeff, that supply and demand is in part drives food prices, and farmers don't have a whole lot of influence on supply or demand for that matter. I think that that's just one of those things that happens over time. Sometimes food prices go up, sometimes they go down. I think all farmers can do is try and produce the best quality product they can at the best price that they can.
I was looking in the kitchen record this last week, and it was a really interesting topic there about the price of food, and that commentator was saying it's going up. And I think I've 1 or 2%, I think, is what they're looking at, maybe 3 or 4%. But here's the rub. The rub was that apparently in Canada, up to a quarter of the food that's steaming, piping hot, ready to eat on your plate, a quarter of that food across Canada is disposed of. Their eyes are bigger than their stomach, or whatever reason. And so this article was great because he said, if you want to cut down on food costs, just buy more appropriately and prepare more appropriately. Pretty simple answer, huh?
Pretty simple. I think they're also talking about waste in the whole food system.
Yeah, this one was only particularly about what you could do as a resident of the region, and you know your food costs are going up in the locals' theirs, and how do you save at your picnic, at your kitchen table? And that is just don't waste.
Well, some interesting thoughts, Jeff. Although I would suggest that we're only looking here at the food system. How much waste is there in other systems? How much waste is there when you build a car? How much waste is there when you build a widget, build a TV? All those things. To look at food in isolation probably isn't a fair way to look at it. Although I would suggest that there is waste everywhere, and whatever we can do to reduce waste, we probably should do. And in my mind, as a farmer and a food producer, I try and eliminate waste wherever I can, because waste is lost income for me. Why wouldn't I try and eliminate waste everywhere I can? Interesting thought about that survey is that, the survey is that it's interesting that food waste occurs in many places throughout the system, not only at the farm, but also, and I think one of the greatest places of waste is by the time food gets home to the consumer. The food that we buy and put in the fridge isn't the same amount of food that we put in our mouths. It gets wasted somewhere. You got any thoughts, Barkley?
Well, I think it goes a lot to the culture of planning. Survival isn't as important as it was, say, in the 17, 1600s, where you didn't always know, you know, when your next meal was going to come from. You know, if the local bakery ran short on wheat to make their bread, there wasn't a truck coming in to fill it up from the next town over. You never knew where supply was going to be balancing out from. Planning what you're buying, putting in the fridge, and what you have space for, and what you're going to have, that's almost a lost art. Now that we have McDonald's and other fast food areas, that, you know, food's just something we get on the run. It's not something that it's part of our culture as it was before, and basically part of our survival. So I think planning something, a little more thought process, you know, to help eliminate the possible waste, because it is important, you know, to look at your underlying profits, the underlying costs, as well as what was just said here, because it doesn't matter if you're a business, but all the money that you have coming and going, you know, does affect what you have at the end of the day in your pockets.
So so food costs are a big deal. Last year we talked a little bit about plastic wrap. What's new in the plastic wrap business? I think that program still exists. I think as a farmer, producer of plastic wrap, you can still gather those materials up and take them to regional landfill.
Well, for our listeners, Jeff, farmers use plastic wrap to wrap their hay to preserve it until it's time to feed it to their livestock. And when farmers feed the crop to their livestock, then the plastic wrap is a product that's left over. So what do you do with it? Traditionally, they took it to the landfill, and it was either buried or burned or something probably not good. Over the past number of years, we've found ways in various industries in Waterloo region particularly, have found ways to reuse that plastic wrap and change it, remanufacture it into goods that people want. For instance, fence rails and outdoor garden furniture, chairs and tables
and decking.
Benches and decking,
yeah.
used quite a lot in decking, especially in marine areas for docks and so on, because that plastic doesn't disintegrate, especially when it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think not only farmers are doing a good thing here, but the manufacturers of those products are doing a good thing by reusing and recycling and building a product that probably can last an incredibly long time.
Just a couple other things we talked about before. Well, in our second segment, we'll talk a little bit more. We're talking about what happened in the past. Maybe in the second segment, we'll talk a bit more what to look forward to the future. So I see our local federation still supports the local food and food link. That's apparently thought to be a good idea yet. Do you think there's a place for agriculture to support things like food link and the rest?
Well, food link is the organization that looks after and organizes local food production in Waterloo region, and I think it's a great organization. They have done a lot of work with local farmers and local producers of food, and helped them in their struggle to send that food directly to consumers. So consumers have an avenue and a venue to purchase and consume a local product. That's a fantastic product. And I think how can one say something negative about an organization like FoodLink helps us and consumers consume local food? I think it's a fantastic organization, and we should very much support it, and so should the municipalities in Waterloo region. It's a driver of economic growth in the region.
And so we're very lucky, too. I had Mark Zerb on the show, and we talked a little bit about the initiatives that public health is doing as far as agriculture, and it was local food was mentioned, but they're looking at a wider range of health determinants. But it's I was just telling Mark at the time, Mark Zerb, that it was good to see that the region so actually mentioning agriculture and being more focused on our industry than it had been up to now, in my estimation. Do you notice that the region is still giving some you know, good consideration to agriculture. It seemed to be more on the radar than it was before.
Well, why shouldn't they, Jeff? For goodness sakes, this region, if you look at it geographically, about almost two-thirds of it is agricultural land. That's part of Waterloo Region. It's an economy and an industry in Waterloo Region that at some points has been neglected, and I think it is fantastic that local governments are recognizing that food production and agricultural land is an economic asset to the whole community, not just farmers, but everybody. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, we're lucky to have that support from our urban listeners, so and our urban buyers for farm produce, and that's just great.
And I think I'll say something more, Jeff. I think that Waterloo Region is somewhat unique in that municipalities and elected officials and staff recognize that agriculture is important to the local economy. And before, you mentioned the link between local food and health. And obviously, what we eat influences our health. And if we eat good food, there's a better chance that we'll be healthy. And for goodness sakes, the fact that Waterloo Region Public Health is promoting local food as a determinant of good health, it's just common sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I think people should well listen to what Waterloo Region Public Health is saying. Eat local food, eat healthy food, and be healthy yourself.
Well, it's interesting how these topics we talked about last year are still important. So it's great that they're still on the radar, and we'll look forward to our next segment when we do a little bit more about what to look forward in the future. And I think in the meantime, we'll play a song here, and then we'll be right back. Just as an intro then, it's your host, Jeff Steger, and with my guests today are Mark Reeser and Barclay Knapp from the Junior Farmers. And this is episode number 33, the first of the year 2013, and we're doing our second year of this show. And today I think I'll play a song. This is a song about community radio, which we are here at CKMS Radio. And it's a song about community radio, but it is in Central America, where community radio has as much a fixture of democracy as it is of local news. So we'll be back shortly. Stay dialed in. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Above sea level, I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation, the big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night, attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never be recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never be recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Mike and Mike. Come stay with my photo.
Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you cannot get your dough back. Fuck the apathetic bullshitter, send them all your Prozac. I will not climb into your telephone tree, and hell no, you cannot put me on hold. It's the same reported message you've been singing all along. Keep handing us the Bible while you're walking off with all the gold. The bureaucratic office sends you merry-go-rounding, while the KKK police the streets by bloodhounding. Interest on the credit card just keeps on compounding, but the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never
never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Une fois que t'as senti le nom, tu t'allonges sur ton dos.
Yeah.
Tu es le dessous. Tu te manques des bulles. Tu t'enfonces dans le
nom.
Reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level.
Hi, this is Krista from Veld Architect. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Well, we're back, folks, and welcome to our show today on January 1st, 2013. My guests today are Mark Reeser and Barclay Knapp. And we just finished off the first section of our show with a little bit about what we talked about last year, 1 year ago. And so this time we'll start into a bit more about what we're looking forward to in this year and what would be the main issues. And I know, Mark, I don't want to follow up on the high price of land. Can you tell our listeners what that means to them as city people? And if you want to talk some more about that, I'd be just delighted. Or any other topic about what's for 2013.
Well, Jeff, I'm kind of interested in what Barclay thinks about the high cost of farmland. I guess you would call me an established farmer. I already own some land, so the land that I own has gone up in value substantially over the past year. However, I would expect that someone like Barclay might have a different view of the whole situation because he currently is not the owner of a farm. So I'm just going to ask Barclay, what do you think of the high cost of farmland? How does it affect you?
Well, as you said, you know, as an established farmer, you know, your prices are going up. That is your nest egg, and that's something that, you know, you have value to fall back on yourself, for you and your family. For a young person or even a mature person who's decided on a career switch and to get into agriculture, it's quite difficult without, you know, a really friendly banker or a large inheritance to get started. You do need a quantity of land. Equipment, you know, has gone up in price a lot too. Fuel is not going to go down in price anytime soon. It's hard to get established. You know, and there is always the chance of renting, but then you need that contract for a certain period of time because you are having to, if you're doing something with crops, you're having to build up the soil and you're having to put in a rotation. So that could be a 7-8 year plan right there, and that really depends on what you're renting. If you want to get more into the livestock or into greenhouses, then you would actually, if you want to rent, that's a little more difficult. You need a little more leeway with your landowner in putting up a building, and what happens to the building, you know, if the rent ends or something goes sour, or the land gets sold. I know I'd had a friend out in Lambton Way. He was looking at Saskatchewan, where the prices were a lot lower there for starting up his business. Luckily, he did stay around, and he found something about 8 miles from his parents, just outside of Sarnia. That just happened to come up, you know, at the right time for him. You have in Netherlands and Germany and England, you have land prices that are extremely high. And with the large urban area that they have, it's really hard to expand. And you see a lot of them coming to North America, where the prices are considerably cheaper. And that's something we can look at of how they're doing. You don't think of farmers as being someone that is transient, that is, you know, having to leave their home and find somewhere else to go be involved in agriculture. But in some cases, that is. And unfortunately, right now, there's a lot of young people that are, you know, looking at changing careers who are interested in agriculture, and that's fantastic. You know, how do you encourage them? How do you not put them on, you know, the first path to their business and tell them, well, you're going to be carrying a huge debt possibly for the rest of your lives, especially for those that come straight out of school? You if you're getting into, you know, something supply and demand, you know, with our marketing systems, whether it's chickens, eggs, or dairy or turkeys, you know, you'll have that quota to go through a bank loan too, as well as, you know, the land, the equipment, hydro costs, gas and water costs, and anything else, possibly renovating a home if it's taken over from an older couple. There are a lot of hidden costs, and unfortunately, it is reality for a lot of the young farmers in Ontario right now.
Well, you've answered some of the other questions I was going to ask you about what are young people who are potentially interested in agriculture doing.
Well, you know, Mark, just been thinking, we had a guest on here, you remember, from Agriculture Management Institute.
Yes, Gerald Renkema.
Right, Gerald was on here. And the gist, I'm going to paraphrase a bit, I think the gist of what he's saying is that with adequate study and developing the proper time frames and borrowing from certain places and all that kind of stuff, doesn't take away the problems that we just talked about here from Barclay, like for young farmers, as we're well aware, but it does suggest it's doable.
So there is some help from yeah. organizations, and there is a small amount of help from the government. The tax system helps you in some small ways, not as much as it could. I think in summary, it has always been difficult to get into agriculture, and it continues to be difficult. And with the increased price of land, I think it's getting more difficult. And it is a huge commitment in terms of time and money to get into the process. As you said, Barclay, there are young people who are deciding to do different things. I myself know of two younger farmers who have decided to move to Saskatchewan because land is cheaper. I hope that they will be successful there. Certainly, it's a different kind of farming out west, and certainly a different climate and a different place to be than here. And I wish them well. It's sad that there isn't enough opportunity here in southwestern Ontario for them. And I feel badly about that, but it's hard to know how to help sometimes. I wish that there was a way for older retiring farmers to hook up with or link up with younger people who are interested in agriculture and find ways to pass on the farm and the business to these people. I think that there are many farmers of a certain age who would gladly have their farm passed on to someone who is interested in agriculture rather than just an advancer, someone from the city or an investor. Farmers, I think, genuinely like to pass on their farms to people who will continue to farm it as they have.
So just so our listeners came up to speed, what does it have to do with an urban person? What's the price of land and farmers getting started have to do with it? Like the food will still be produced if we have all these young farmers coming along, offhand, I don't want to be too cynical, but obviously you need to have a rural community, you have a rural business. But how does this, if our urban listener was listening to the show, they would say, what's the consequence if we don't have young farmers come along, we can continue consolidation? Is it, have we lost something that's tangible, or... It's a tough one. I don't want to put you on the spot, but, you know...
It is a tough question, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think... And the reason I brought it up
I've never really thought of it in that way.
Yeah.
So what? Why should an urban person even care?
Exactly, in a nutshell.
Well, I'll make an attempt.
Okay.
I think it's to everyone's advantage, urban and rural, to have a thriving economy, both in urban areas and in rural areas. And I think part of a thriving economy in rural areas and in agriculture is to have a good spectrum of ages in the business. If all the farmers are old and ready to retire, who will carry on? And it probably means there will be a change in the age of the people farming. What is appropriate and what is good and what's advantageous? I think that if we only and always sell to the highest bidder, in time, much of agricultural land could be owned by investors. Is that the best way to manage farmland? Or is it better for farmers to actually own their own land instead of renting it? And again, how does that affect urban people? I'm not sure. I just think I would say that it's good for urban people to have a thriving rural economy. Mm-hmm. It means that there's local food available. It means that you have an example of agriculture near you so that you can actually see where your food comes from. Is there an advantage to that? I don't know. What do you think, Barkley?
Well, Hank, you never should have to worry about where your food comes from. If you look at what happened after the earthquakes in Haiti and in Chile, suddenly their whole transportation system for putting food in the urban areas stopped, and the people just went berserk. They really hadn't been in situations like that before for a lot of the younger generations, that there was a lack of food. And unfortunately, when that does happen, people don't know how to respond to it because they never think that's something they're going to be missing out on. And that's not something anyone should experience.
So go back a little bit to local food.
Yeah.
I think there's something comforting about knowing that the food that you eat can be produced locally and close to where you live. Not that we ever anticipate that there will be some crisis where we can't import food anymore, but it's still just, to me, it feels good that I can go a short distance from where I live and purchase food from a farmer who grew the food. There's just something comforting about that.
Well, that's a good point, Mark, and I thank you for trying that topic. I know it's pretty hard. It sort of makes sense to us as Indian business, but we want to make a connection with our listeners in town here, and so they know that what's in our interest is in their interest. And an industry that's top heavy with one age group or one type of owner is not. It's room for thought. Is this good or bad?
Let me go at it another way too, Jeff. When you consume local food, it is relatively easy to find out how that food was produced and the methods used to produce that food, what method of husbandry was used to produce it, what chemicals were used to produce that food, if there were any, maybe there aren't any. That's very easy to do, or relatively easy to do, when food is produced locally. When food is imported from far, far away, another continent, how does one know, how can one be sure that the method used to produce that food is what the package says or what you think it is? It's just very hard to determine what it is. I like the assurance that when something is produced locally, I know how it's been produced because that's important to me. And I think that's probably important to consumers too.
And local fresh food also tastes better. I know I love bananas, and bananas is something we can't grow in Canada. But that's something that's picked while it's still green and unripe, and then they put a hormone on it to ripen it. And I know I've bought bananas that... never ripened. I've had them for, I once bought a bunch of bananas for 3 weeks. they were still green. You can't get that. You get a tomato that's coming off, you know, say Angie Koch's farm, you know, just outside of Baden, and you know that tomato is going to be fresh. It's going to be the right juices. It's not decaying or anything. And you know you've got something with the right vitamins that are in it as well, and that's something you want to give to your family.
And the good part about that, Barclay, is you can go to Angie and say, Angie, how did you produce that tomato? And she'll tell you, and you know it's true. You can't do that when you get food in a package from somewhere else.
Well, that's pretty good. Fellas, we'll take a little break here and do some more songs and another announcement, and we'll be right back. And I want to thank my guests here, Mark and Barclay, for coming in. It's episode 33 of the Agriculture Show. See you shortly.
Hi.
You know what they do in Japan? They're so...
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm there was a chick, prettiest chick I know. With a little curve here and a little curve there, this chick, she had curves everywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And oh, this chick, she had a walk, E-I-E-I-O. And how this walk would drive him wild, swinging to and fro. With a little wiggle here and a little wiggle there, man, this chick had moves to spare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. When she went walking into town, E-I-E-I-O. The local gentry popped their eyes, carnation, what a show. With a gulp dang here and a gosh darn there, heavens to Betsy, I do declare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. There was a barn dance Saturday night, E-I-E-I-O. And the fellas came from miles around just to see her do-si-do. With a promenade here and a promenade there, at a square dance, man, this chick's no square. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. I used to be a traveling man, E-I-O. Until I hit MacDonald Place, things were mighty slow. With a little chick here and a little chick there, I didn't have a real chick anywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. This farmer's daughter knocked me out, E-I-E-I-O. I asked MacDonald for her hand, and happy hollered go. With a little curve here and a little wiggle there, a gob dang here and a gosh darn there, a do-si-do here and a promenade there. I got my own private county fair. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-O. Donald had a farm, E-I-O. That's right, MacDonald. It's all or nothing, baby.
This is Rick Dunnett from the 2012 Waterloo Region International Plowing Match Committee. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo.
We're back, folks, and welcome back to our show. I hope you're enjoying it so far. It's our first show of 2013. And we start off our show with a quick review of what we talked about exactly 1 year ago. And then we did our next segment was about the price of land and how it impacts our urban listeners and residents. And so for our last segment, or second last, we're going to talk a little bit about an interesting question that our previous guest posed to me on the switch through from his show to mine. Now, he's got an interesting show. I kind of love it. It's called the Fandom Show. So this is people who, if you're a fan of something, he talks about that. And it's quite delightful. He talks about, you know, such casual but can be fun things as the best software, games, comic books, wrestling, all those things that people like to talk about, like the Leafs or something, but only about some of the more modern entertainments. Making a long story short, his question was, so what do you farmers do in the wintertime? So I got to ask my guest, so Mark, you know, you're a farmer. What do you do in the wintertime?
Well, I'm a little different than some farmers in that I have livestock year-round. So I basically look after my chickens all year round the same. You know, it's basically the same. I don't do anything different in the winter than I do in the summer with regard to my livestock. However, a couple of the different things I do in the winter, I spend a considerable amount of time planning what I'm going to do in the rest of the year. It's the time when you sit down and you finish your last year's income tax statement and so on, and contemplate how you are going to do things differently in the new year so as to make more money, because you always want to grow if you can. And that's not always something that just happens. It's something that has to be planned. So I set aside a considerable amount of time trying to plan what I'm going to do differently this year from what I did last year. What do you do, Barkley?
Well, currently I'm working on a plan myself of jumping from the produce that I grow just as a hobby on the side to actually going to a business. So I'm working on what plants I'm going to be growing next year, where I'm going to be focusing on my sales, such as a plan of how to approach restaurants and offer them what I grow. Also looking at, you know, over my costs of, you know, what I purchased this past year to increase my plants and increase my capability of watering them all. And then just see, you know, how I evaluated that and see how that was cost effective or not.
I suppose it's like, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
You could probably just leave right in the center there if you want. It'll encourage more of a back and forth, like just a thought. But if whatever you're comfortable, I'm sorry, I interrupt you there. You go right ahead there.
One of the other things we do, or many farmers do, is attend conferences and seminars and so on during the winter. Farmers don't generally have a whole lot of time to do those kinds of things in the summertime or the spring or the fall because we're busy. Winter tends to be a bit of a slower time, so we try and educate ourselves as much as we can onto what is new, what's happening, what's the new research, what can I learn, what can I do better next year. I know I've often in the past probably attended 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seminars over the winter.
Well, I do a lot of the same thing too. You know, I have to, as a farmer, on my own farm, you have to get your pesticide license renewed, and it's a little bit longer time frame. And there's also livestock medicines courses and various things like that. Bookwork, that can be a real challenge, eh, until you get all the stuff in the right columns and get that away. It's also true, you know, in the wintertime, it's a time for a bit of rest. And I noticed I'm not afraid to take a 2-hour lunch at times. I'm not afraid to sleep in a little bit. It's been typically a long, hard season, sun up to sun down. 12-hour days and the heat doesn't do you, it's pretty hard on you. And so,
well, you're right, Jeff, because I forgot, but the wintertime is when I take my vacation because I can't take it in the summer. So I look forward to going south and getting away from the snow for a short period during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's work or not, but hey, recreation is and rest and relaxation is a component of work, is it not?
Well, it's important. I mean, I know it's easy to stay there and keep on working away, and anybody in our listeners are on a farm or in town, and it's very, you get in a routine, and it's work, work, work.
It's also a time when you can spend more time with your family,
mm-hmm.
Because there are times during spring, summer, and fall when you don't see your family very much because you're busy doing stuff. And winter is an opportunity to do things that you didn't have the chance to do during the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're unique as a business in that we have that time during the winter to do that.
So what farm shows are you going to this year, you guys? Are you going to go down to Southwest Ag, or are you going to go... Actually, that's this weekend, I expect, isn't it, Southwest Ag? And are you going to any farm shows? What are you doing?
Contemplating going to the what is it called? The U.S. Farm Show in Louisville, Kentucky, which I think is one of the largest farm equipment shows in the world.
That's a big one. That's really big.
And I believe it's in February, and there are hundreds of thousands of attendees at that conference over a period of, I think it's actually more than a week. I can't remember.
It's probably that big now,
But if you ever want to see any kind of machinery or equipment produced for agriculture, that's the place to go.
Yep. One of them. It's a big one. It's been years since it's been 20 years, but I understand it's gotten bigger and bigger, and you really just about can't see everything if you really wanted to anyhow. It's so big. You have to go there with a bit of a plan and pick out the seminars on machinery which you're actually keen on seeing. Barclay, yourself, what are you
just
doing?
Just going off what Mark was saying about all the conferences we have. Just even this week, you have down at Ridgetown College, you have the Southwest Ag Conference. And this week also, actually, on Thursday, the Grey and Bruce Farmers Week starts. And that's 1 week up in Grey and Bruce County, where every day they pick a certain commodity or a certain industry within agriculture, and they have speakers on just that. Also on the 19th, you have FarmSmart Health University Guelph. That's kind of in a jigsaw conference format where you have about 10 rooms, and every hour there is a different topic on. And last year I enjoyed, they brought in some people from Europe, and I enjoyed hearing about their agriculture. Beginning of February, you have also University of Guelph, over 3 days, you have the Guelph Organic Conference. For those that are interested in organic or wanting to know more about it, and they've started into it, it's a great conference, I find, because it can go anything from livestock to collecting seeds to produce to mushrooms.
So which of these topics are you interested in? I go online and check out those agendas. Is there something that piques your imagination or curiosity this year?
Well, as Mark said, this is a time to learn about what the research has been that's come up and the new technologies that are there. I love hearing about the different statistics that they've been finding on tillage. There's always the argument for full tillage or for no tillage, or there's even new types of tillage coming up from the United States on experiments down there, and I really like hearing the research of that. It's also of interest, what the organic side is doing. I do know that is a very large agricultural technique in that industry down in the United States, and I like hearing, what potentially could be the future up here, depending on how big organic becomes. Another thing that really interests me is, we talked about earlier, is the connection between the consumer and the producer. And I did have the chance back in November to go to the Sarnia Food and Wine Show, and looking at my calendar, in about a week and a half, London's having a food and wine show, and that's really interesting to see how consumers and producers get connected in a setting like that, in a really intimate setting.
A couple of thoughts, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
One is that we're talking here, Barclay and I are talking about farm seminars that one might think are only open to farmers. In fact, I think many of these seminars are open to the public, and anyone can attend if they wish. And I would suggest that if you're, just as an example, if you are interested in getting a feel of what agriculture is like in terms of research and new techniques and so on, one might consider attending the Southwestern Ontario Farm Show in Ridgetown, which is this week, correct? I believe so.
Yeah. It's a bit of a hike for people, but it's a good show, I understand.
It is. It's Ridgetown is about an hour and a half, 2 hours southwest of Kitchener. A second comment. I am attending the Ontario Farmland Trust Forum, which is held annually at the Arboretum in Guelph. The Ontario Farmland Trust is an organization that acquires or enables farmland to be saved from urbanization.
Now, this is interesting because you had mentioned something about how do you get connecting new farmers with older farmers. Is there something that they do?
They have attempted to do that in the past and not particularly successfully, but we're still
trying,
looking at
that's
it.
That's okay. Yeah.
It's interesting. The forum is a place for open discussion after a series of speakers have made presentations. Basically brainstorming ideas on how to preserve farmland, which is raw material for agriculture in Ontario. As people probably know, urbanization continues to gobble up productive farmland in Ontario, and we are looking at ways to counteract that so that there is always a space for agriculture here in Ontario.
Yeah, there's some good news there. Just I know the official plan for the region is up for review, and I think they're obliged to follow the provincial guidelines. And there's limits on how much greenfield development versus infilling can happen to accommodate the projected growth of any place in Ontario. So you folks up there at Farmland Trust must be. This is the first time I've ever seen where the government actually put in hard guidelines and percentages and how much will be. That's quite significant, eh? You think?
May I say another word about farmland trust?
Please, yep.
We preserve farmlands in at least two different ways. One, we actually take donations of farmland and make sure that there are suitable protections put in place so that that donated farmland always remains farmland. We also take donations of the the use of the land for the future, so that we don't actually own the land, but there is an easement put on that farmland so that it must always remain farmland, even though it may be owned by anyone. It will remain as farmland.
These are certainly ideas that I think a lot of people are interested in, because I don't think there's a person in Ontario that hasn't heard at least something about or seen, probably more seen than anything, than when they see farmland turned into housing and factories and so on, and they all people in Ontario wonder about that. What's going on here? So you never know. You might get a guest be interested in Farmland Trust. How big of a group is that?
I'll answer it in a different way.
Yeah.
How many acres of farmland over the past 5 years or more, maybe it's actually 10 years that we've been in existence, how much farmland have we actually protected, either by easement or ownership? And I am just going to guess here because I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's in the thousands of acres.
Hmm. Nice stuff, nice
work.
Which
is a start.
Yes, oh yeah. Well, most things are like that. People with conscience and or an interest in those things start something, and you hope that the momentum rolls and things get better and better all the time. Okay, so let's roll into the last bit of our show today. We're almost at the top of the hour. We can do another 10, 15 minutes, do a little bit of an outro and wrap up of our topics today. We'll play a song, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
An apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up. You come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy makes the sun come out when heavens are cloudy. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, when you bake, Mama, I don't want cake. Mama, for my sake, I'm going to the oven to make some ever-loving shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up. You come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Thank you. pie. Shoo, shoo, fly pie. Shoo, shoo, fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoo, fly pie. Shoo, fly pie. Shoo, shoo, fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
I'm Mark Wales from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo.
Hey, we're back, folks, and thanks for tuning in today. It's been a lovely sunny day out today. It's January 1st, 2013. In our show today, we just talked a little bit about what was happened last year with the goals and the concerns we had 1 year ago. We talked a little bit about what this year's goals might be, and in our last segment we talked a little bit about what do farmers do in the winter. So it's a kind of funny question, I suppose, to us in the industry, but it makes sense to our listeners because they certainly see the trees and the leaves and nothing growing out there, and typically in the an urban driver in the countryside would see machinery and things busy, busy, busy.
Well, definitely blowing snow too, because our laneways aren't short.
That's true. Yeah, most of those jobs take twice as long because not only you got to blow some snow, but you usually the door's frozen shut and there's a big snowbank in front of something, and it just takes a little bit longer to do all those regular jobs. Like it would around most people's homes too. You just don't jump in your car. You got to scrape your windshield and a bunch of other darn things.
I think urban people sometimes don't realize what an issue a lot of snow is, especially on a livestock farm, because when my feed truck arrives, I have to have my laneway clear. And sometimes I wonder why I'm spending so much time cleaning snow. I have spent often 5 hours cleaning up after a snowfall. That's just how long it takes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they probably, you have to have, like, what they say, like an inch of snow maximum? What's the criteria that the feed company uses for that?
Well, I'm not sure there's any criteria, but if a feed truck comes into your laneway and gets stuck, it costs a whole lot of money to get that feed truck unstuck, and no one wants to pay for that.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking my experience way back in the day was with the dairy industry, and it was prescribed in much detail about how the condition of your driveway was for turnarounds and so on, whether you could get the milk truck in that particular case. So, yeah, so folks, it's like you have to keep your driveway clear because you have to be ready for who knows what's coming in or what there. Otherwise, you're in deep trouble. So, and talk about in the wintertime, we did kind of talk a little bit about the numerous trade shows that were on where you might be able to go to a seminar or learn about some machinery that is specific to your sector of the agriculture industry, or maybe more general themes about, as Mark pointed out, in his the preservation of farmland through the Farmland Trust. Is that a Guelph? Where do they call home?
Yes, it's the usually at the Arboretum at the University of Guelph.
Okay,
a very nice venue for a seminar.
So we're in 2013. Barclay, what do you want to do this year? Are you, we're so glad to see you on behalf of the Federation of Agriculture, starting a new junior farmer club, or supporting them as they get started, attending the monthly meetings of the Wildlife Federation. It seems to me you're pretty involved in a lot of stuff. What's on your agenda for this year?
Well, so far this winter, just like you mentioned, catching up on sleep, working three jobs in the summer and pushing myself, doesn't leave a lot of time for sleep, but the body demands it. I'm hoping to, like I said, expand my what I call a hobby into, you know, actually in agriculture. The government has certain requirements as to what constitutes being a farm business or not. Also, I am working on potentially another junior farmer club, bringing in lessons of rural leadership and rural and volunteer development to a different part of Western Ontario. And yeah, I'm hoping that hockey can come back and I can sit and actually, you know, on a Saturday night and watch a game. I'm hoping in 2013 that the strike can end.
It's quite amazing. Every week there's a little story there in the sports section of the paper. What's happening with hockey? Oh my goodness, it's so complex. I'd hate to see what kind of agreement they're trying to work on there. There's some really subtle but obviously very important clauses within that agreement. Are you a hockey player, Mark? Are you watching hockey or not?
Well, obviously not. Not now. I'm not watching NHL, but I certainly do when it is there.
Did you watch the World Juniors? They're on now. It's pretty good.
I watched the Canada-Germany game. When was that? A couple days ago.
Yeah. So, Markley, you've been getting your hockey fix with the World Juniors and other things?
Well, it's tough not having cable out at the farm. Have caught a few games, just coincidentally. Though I'm also a Twitter follower of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I'm, you know, getting tired of hearing about Christmas ornaments and what the coach is doing and watching games from the past on this Pittsburgh local TV station. It's great that, you know, the OHL is actually getting and the Western Hockey League is getting airtime on TSN and Sportsnet, and that we can watch the Spengler Cup games and the junior games. Well, I think they're playing them 2-3 times a day on TSN right now. So it's great we can give that amateur hockey a lot bigger boost. But we do want to see the best players of the world, and we're hockey fans. You know, doesn't matter, you know, what industry you're part from and what your background is in Canada, that is our sport.
Well, it is our sport, isn't it? Is lacrosse still our official sport? I can't remember what's going on.
It is, yes, it is.
Okay, and so maybe in between all the farm shows you're going to and so on, maybe we'll have hockey back. There's last thing I saw was perhaps January 19th for some reason. I don't know why. I was reading a story yesterday, and they thought that was the next possible date. So, I guess that makes the world go round that these guys get back to playing, and we'll get back to farming soon enough in the new year. So what's up?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
It actually has to do with agriculture, not hockey. I'm going on vacation to Florida like I do every second year, and I'm always fascinated by the kinds and types of agriculture that occur in especially South Florida. And it's always fun to drive through and sometimes stop and see what's going on, what they're growing, what they're doing in a climate that's very different than ours, and to sample some of the produce that they produce.
Yeah. Well, that is kind of fun, isn't it? It makes you think of something fun to do. Like there used to be farm tours back in the day. Now, I know the University of Guelph does it as part of their graduating, part of your getting a degree and so on, is a foreign and also North American crop or livestock tour. And I think we can look in the various farm publications, see various tourist groups who will have farm tours. But you're right. It's just so much fun to see how other guys are doing stuff. Eh?
Well, you don't have to have an organized tour, Jeff. When we go down, I drive along, and if I see something that interests me, I stop.
And how do you do that when you got a car full of people?
I'm driving.
You powerful.
So I make the decisions.
Awesome.
So if I see something I like, I stop. Well, and if there's somebody there, I talk to them. And
next time you and I go somewhere, I think I'm going to drive.
Hey, you'd be amazed at how amiable farmers are. If you show some interest in what they're doing, they love to talk to you. I'll talk to you and tell you what they're doing and why they're doing it. And for goodness sakes, why urban people should take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Stop by and talk to a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm a farmer. I'll talk to you if you drop by.
Yeah. So, and at Christmas time, you might get a can of cookies and who knows what else, eh? I mean, it's just our holiday season just ending. This is New Year's Day in 2013. So that sounds pretty like a lot of fun, Mark, and I get that. It is kind of fun to see what other guys are doing. Like even in Ontario, you can see guys operate operations in a different manner. Good different soil types. They got a whole different bunch of machinery in the barn and a whole different attitude towards
them. Don't forget, Jeff, it's not only guys.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's true. There's lots of women farmers nowadays. You know, we should get from the census, the latest census. It's funny, it's 2010, right? When was the census last? The reports are just coming out now, so it might be kind of fun to look at that and just to see what is our ratio in Waterloo Region, for instance, which is our catchment area, of the typical farm operator, for lack of a better word, whether it's a partnership or corporate. Or
I'm not sure that the census will always tell you accurately who is running a farm.
Yeah, we're not looking for accuracy as much as just to get an idea. You know, that's, yeah.
I suspect that for a long time, females have been doing a lot of the decision-making on farms.
Well, probably most of it.
Not been getting a whole lot of credit for it.
Yeah, I know.
I expect that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years, even longer. I think I've heard some pretty good jokes about that, too. Yeah, so, but, you know, it does bring the question, just for curiosity, Mark, you know, you prefaced your comment with you don't know if the census would cover it all, but it is sometimes difficult to get good information about agriculture. For instance, suppose you really wanted to find out the ratio of farm operators and who they were. You've correctly, in your opinion, said that the fence is probably not the best. Where would you get good information about the type of farm operators?
Well, that's a $1 million question. I don't really know. I suppose that first-hand knowledge is best, and the only thing that I can think of is actually know people who are farming,
mm-hmm.
and try and make a try and discern who's actually making the decisions and who's spending the money and so on. So
yeah,
it's a difficult question to answer.
Yeah, I know. But there's always some interest in that from people. Yeah, welcome to our casual station here. I see Mark's quickly looking for whatever that's making a noise there. Barkley, you got your devices shut off, or are you still doing them here?
Mine shut off. I've done this enough.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's good. Well, it's always a challenge. You know, it's important nowadays to keep connected up with important business stuff, but I just found a paper the other day that they're once again reminding theater goers to turn those devices off, and nothing worse from the actors or the rest of the listeners to have a little beep, beep, beep going in the background, so... Yeah, so we talked a little bit about what you're up to, and Mark's busy on the phone right now. We'll probably just play another tune, and we'll sign off today. And I just want to welcome you aboard and listening in. This is the Agriculture Show, episode 33, and it's January 1st, 2013. We shall be right back.
Scenery. She can make a chocolate soda go. You ought to go around and dig it. When she's working at the spigot, you can hear her calling orders like this. Give me a ham white down and a burger rare. Cider slaw and a seven layer. OJ up, wreck two in a cup, and a boogie woogie blue plate. Give me a crippled beef on a load of hay. Combo rye and a bottle of ale. Coming through with a slab of moo and a boogie woogie blue plate. Draw one, draw two, get that coffee perking. Draw three, draw four, hold that mayo on the chopped egg working. Want a tuna wheat with a side of fries. 86 on the cherry pies. Cider greens on the Franks and beans. And a boogie woogie blue plate. Chopped egg working. Want a tuna wheat with a side of fries. 86 on the cherry pies. Cider greens on the Franks and beans. And a boogie woogie blue plate. Boogie woogie blue plate.
This is Murray Zink. You're listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Well, that's about it for us today, and thanks for listening in, folks. It's your host, Jeff Steger. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. And I wanted to say big thanks to Mark there about coming in today, as he was our anniversary guest since he was in here 1 year ago. And hopefully you can come back again, Mark. What's your schedule for the Ontario Federation? You're a zone director for them and numerous organizations. Are you looking for a very busy year or a little different?
Well, busy's good, Jeff, because that means you're doing something.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, anyway.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I like doing stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll be able to find the time to come back, and we'll talk the issues from time to time.
Anytime, Jeff.
Perfect. Well, that's lovely. And Barkley, once again, very good to see you. Thanks for coming out. You've been a real supporter of our station by coming out. And that sounds like you are going to have a bit of time. Maybe we'll look forward to you coming in for a month or two on a regular basis. You're always welcome. And so we'll look forward to that. Junior farmers, your own interests that you're busy at. So life is good.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Okay. Okay, folks, that's it for us. We'll see you next week. It'll be episode 34 next week, and we'll see you then.